Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 220. And we're going to talk about, tolls. I was going to have a nice upbeat episode, and then I got a letter in the mail. So now we're going to have a rant. We're also going to talk about how you can cool just your bed with a mosquito net, a tale from the road involving sleeping at a casino, and a place to visit that might be a little radioactive, but not a big deal, I suppose. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in once again. I'm very happy to be here with you. Just a side note, I just came back from the cat hospital. We actually have those here in Chicago, and we just spent a whole lot of money for surgery for one of our cats. Now, the cat is fine. The cat had a basal cell carcinoma, which is, it is cancer. It is the big C word, but it is the kind that is generally fixed by a simple excision. The cat's prognosis is excellent. She's home resting, so there's no reason to worry about the cat. However, what I am worried about is those of you traveling with pets who do not have a lot of money saved up. Because this cost thousands of dollars, and this is something that can happen randomly at any time, and you have to either pay for it or make a very difficult decision about your pet. So because of that, if you're someone traveling with a pet and you don't have a whole lot of money, you might want to look into insurance. We don't have insurance. Some of my friends who have pets do have insurance. They highly recommend it. I don't have any brands to recommend or anything like that. But it's something else to consider when you hit the road. Pets can be very, very costly and suddenly costly, just like your vehicle. So, word to the wise, and thank you for any well wishes you have for Hunter the kitty as she sleeps for the next 2 weeks in recovery. Now, as some of you know, I recently drove to Vermont and back on a trip, totally fine trip, and tolls are a fact of American life now. It used to be that there were tolls across bridges, and there were a couple of turnpikes that had some tolls, but, you know, you're going to pay a couple bucks. It wasn't a big deal. You kept some change in your car, and you didn't really think about the tolls. And then there started to get these private roads. I remember there's a road in Virginia called the Greenway that cost a few dollars, and that would add up over the course of a week, so we kind of tried to avoid it, and now I understand there's no avoiding it because the population has grown so much over there in Loudoun County. But now, with the advent of toll booth-free zones where you pay your toll as you drive, things have gotten crazy. Prices have gone through the roof, more and more tolls exist, and you don't know how much they cost. You just drive through them and hope for the best. So I have two main points to make about tolls, and I'm going to do it right now. The first is that since my last episode talking about tolls, things have changed a bit. EasyPass is now accepted almost everywhere. EasyPass is accepted in Atlanta now and also in Florida, which was a big deal because Florida had at one time three different toll systems, and you had to manage with them all separately. So I highly recommend anybody who's going to be traveling on interstates in the U.S. to get an EasyPass. Now, which EasyPass should you get? Well, you definitely want to get the EasyPass that is in the state that you're going to be driving the most in, because you get a discount for those states. For example, I have an Illinois EasyPass. I live in Illinois. Most of the tolls I go through are in Illinois, and because of that, I pay maybe half as much as somebody from out of state. But when I go to Ohio or New York or Indiana or Florida, I'm paying full rate because I don't have their EasyPass. Definitely get an EasyPass. They don't cost anything. You can just sign up for it. You have to make a deposit, but that goes towards tolls. And that's it. And the new way they're doing it now is you get a sticker. You don't have to have these plastic things that you stick up on your windshield and then it gets hot and they fall down or, you know, all that. Now you just get a sticker. And what I recommend is that when you sign up for EasyPass, don't get one sticker. Get two or three and keep careful control of them because they are money. If somebody gets a hold of one of those, they can charge your account. And the reason you want to get more than one is that because they're stickers, they're kind of permanent to the vehicle. So if you have a rental car, or if you have more than one vehicle, or you want to, you know, just take your pass with you while you're driving someone else's car, something like that, if you want any portability with it, you're going to need more than one. And that's what I did too. I have three, and I have another one. So I have three vehicles that I drive. I have one in each of those, and then I have another one that I can travel with. And that's a lot cheaper than using the rental car's toll systems, because they usually charge an administrative fee. All this stuff changes all the time. Anytime I talk about fees, they change all the time. But that is my advice. However, knowing that advice, you should know that not every place takes Easy Pass. For example, there's still that crazy road in Denver that doesn't take Easy Pass. Every time you drive it, they'll take a picture of your license plate and will send you a bill at some point. They're not very timely about it. Usually a month or 6 weeks later, you get this bill. Seems like a really silly way of dealing with it to me, but that's what they want to do. So that's how it is. And Oklahoma, I believe, is still not on Easy Pass. Oklahoma has a whole bunch of tolls now. Easy Pass is not the solve everything solution, but it is definitely making things easier. And not only that, we are no longer at the point where you can run a toll. It used to be in the old days that you could run a toll. You could, like, drive up and then not pay and just take off. And then sometimes the cops would chase you or whatever. Those days are gone. You can't run a toll now. If you drive past one of these toll-taking things and you don't have the proper pass, they're simply going to find you by your license plate and charge you. And that bill is going to go to wherever your car is registered. So be sure the registration on your car matches an address that you can get the mail from. Because if you're on the road full time, and let's say you have an address in South Dakota, but it's an address of convenience, you might get a toll bill sent there. And if you don't pay the toll bill, you can get a lien put on your vehicle. And I have had that happen to me because I had a defective toll pass many years ago. That's a whole other story. So that's my advice. Now let me tell you the story. So toll prices have gone absolutely crazy, but I didn't realize how crazy until this one trip. So I drove from Chicago through Indiana, through Ohio, through a little itty bit of Pennsylvania, and then through half of New York. Now, how much do you think that would cost in tolls? You know, back in the old days, that would have been like 10 bucks, maybe 12 bucks. No, it was closer to $60 one way. $60 one way. So that means it's $120 round trip, meaning that it's going to be cheaper to fly from Chicago to New York, most likely. When you add in gas and everything else, yeah. If you're trying to go cheap, don't drive unless you have more than one person in the car, because that's for as many people as you can fit in there, obviously. But I had a weird thing happen. So I'm driving through Chicago. Leaving Chicago, there's no tolls for me, but coming back into Chicago, there's one. It's called the Skyway. It's like $7 or something. It's expensive. But leaving, so oh, fine. And then I get on the Indiana Interstate, I-80, which turns into I-90, and there's a bunch of tolls there. I pay those. Ohio, same thing. Ohio Turnpike, pay the tolls. That's fine. Pennsylvania was so tiny, I didn't do anything. And then I get to New York, and in New York, you pass a lot of toll booths. They don't do it like, here's your entry and exit, and you pay one toll. They do it like every time you pass one of these things, you have to pay another toll. And there's no lights. There's no, hey, this is going to cost you $5. There's nothing. You're just driving, and these tolls are accumulating. And, you know, I've got the Easy Pass, so whatever. I've got the money in there. It'll pay for it. It's fine. And, you know, I get all the way to Vermont, do my thing. I come back, not worried about it. I notice at one point that my toll account replenishes, which means I spent more than $50. That was expected. Okay, no big deal. 2 weeks later, or maybe even a little bit longer than that, I get a letter from the state of New York, from the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, actually, called Tolls by Mail. And on this letter that I have right in my hands here, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 tolls. And that's only for one way. So I went online and looked at my account, which is just my license plate number, because I didn't ever create an account with New York. I actually have twice as many tolls as that. I owe the state of New York $55 in tolls, even though I had an Easy Pass. So what's going on here? Well, first thing I did was I went into my Illinois Easy Pass account and made sure that I didn't get charged from them. And I didn't. For some reason, New York State simply didn't read my Easy Pass at any of these tolls, even though it did in Ohio and Indiana. I don't know why. I called New York 3 times, and I called Illinois 2 times, spent over an hour on the phone trying to get an answer, and nobody had any clue. Everybody from Illinois was like, it's a problem with New York. New York was like, it's a problem with Illinois. So the Easy Pass system is still a mess. At least it is organized better so that they will recognize each other's Easy Passes, but it's not perfect. There are flaws, and if anything goes wrong, you're kind of screwed. You're going to have to pay. Okay, so that's bad enough. But then I found something new, and this directly impacts van life. I've never seen this before. So there are different tolls for different vehicles, right? It's usually done by axle. A 2-axle vehicle will pay less than a 3-axle vehicle, will pay less than a 4-axle vehicle, etc., etc., etc. And this kind of makes sense because axles typically dictate how much weight and how much wear you're putting on the road. So, okay, it kind of makes sense. Obviously, the big 18-wheelers are going to be paying the most, and little Honda Civic's going to be paying the least. Makes total sense. However, I discovered when looking at the detail of my toll that sometimes, not all the time, I was paying 3 times the normal toll rate because I was in a Sprinter. Sprinters have 2 axles. So what's the dealio? Turns out the dealio is that some of these states have started to charge by height. If you have a high-top vehicle, you will pay more tax. And it looks like the limit, and I looked at a few different states, Virginia and New York, for example, both have this now on some of their toll roads. The limit for height is either 7 feet or 7'6". And if you have a high-top Sprinter, you're over that. If you have a high-top ProMaster or a high-top Transit, or, you know, if you have a high-top vehicle, you are probably over this, which means you're going to pay as much as 3 times the toll simply because your vehicle is tall. I don't understand the rationale behind this. I mean, I suppose they could say, well, if you've got a tall vehicle, you're either in a commercial vehicle or you're in an RV, but you're certainly not commuting to work, so we can fleece you a bit more. I mean, I guess that's what's going on. I don't know. But you should know that if you drive on interstates with toll roads in a high-top vehicle, your tolls could be a lot more than you expected. And I don't know what equipment they're using to measure the height of vehicles. I mean, my Sprinter's way the heck over 7 feet. I'm pushing 9'6" in my Sprinter. But half the time, it recorded me as a low-roof vehicle, and half the time, it recorded me as a high-roof vehicle. And I don't know what magic they're doing, but it is completely ineffective. But I can tell you that a typical low-roof toll here was $3.03, but then the high-roof toll was $10.83. It's a big difference. So what do you do? First thing you do is you definitely get an Easy Pass. It's just going to make your life a lot easier. Get the Easy Pass, get on the system, and you will get discounts in the state for which that Easy Pass is registered. So it's well worth doing. Second thing is, don't ignore tolls. Pay attention. Some of them are ridiculous. Like some of the tolls in Illinois, you're supposed to like write down every toll you go through and then go online and pay them. That just isn't going to work. But theoretically, they will mail you a bill. But you have to keep track of where those bills are going. The other thing to do is, if you have time, avoid toll roads. All the GPS apps have an avoid toll road option. And if you're not in a super hurry, well, heck, see the sights. Take some of the state highways. Take Route 20, take Route 50, take Route 6, wherever you happen to be. It's going to take longer, but it's going to be a lot more interesting. You're going to feel a lot less sleepy, and you're going to see a lot more cool stuff. And you're not going to have to pay $110 or whatever it was to drive to New York and back. So how much is your time worth? Would an extra 2 hours driving be worth $110? I mean, that's $55 an hour. I'll work for $55 an hour. So it's just something to consider and something to be aware of. And what irks me the most, I think, about this whole thing is you don't have a choice. You don't have an opt-out. I mean, there might be signs that say last exit before toll, but you don't actually know what you're getting into when you drive on these roads. Toll ahead. How much is it? How do I know if it went through? How do I know if you're going to bill me by my Easy Pass or my license plate? What exactly is going on, and what recourse do I have? And the answer is, What's going on is you're going to be billed some amount, and you've got very little recourse in fighting it. And I talked to one guy in New York who I, you know, was able to get a little off the record, and he's like, yeah, just pay it. There's no way you're going to fight this. We don't ever give in. And I think that's the sad reality. So, folks, one of the reasons people stay out west in their vehicles is because there's far fewer tolls there. And, you know, I'm an East Coast guy. I'm used to tolls, but I do think they're getting out of hand, especially when you consider that interstates are federally funded. You are already paying taxes for these roads. So, anyway, I'm happy to hear if you have any thoughts, but I just wanted to raise this issue and especially to make you aware that there are now tolls based on height. And who knows what else? Maybe they'll start basing them on width or color or something. Thank you to Kent for helping to support this program by buying me a gallon of diesel at buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. Because of Kent and those others of you who support the show, we will have no ads in this episode or any others until you guys stop supporting me, and then we're going to have to do ads. But we're not going to have that, are we? No, no, we're not. Yeah. Again, if you'd like to support the show, and I absolutely appreciate it, you can buy me a gallon of diesel at buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. And we all thank you. Van life news. Ooh, a few things in the news today. Some of them are more interesting than others. The first one is a big thing. The Supreme Court has upheld homeless camping bans. The city of Grants Pass basically made it illegal to be homeless and sleep outside. I mean, that's the bottom line. And you would get fined and increasing fines in the hundreds of dollars for being found sleeping outside. And how does this impact van life? Sleeping in a van's no different. And suddenly there are actual laws that can be used. Instead of getting the knock, you may get the knock and a ticket for $150. And the Supreme Court has said this is okay, which announced to every other community in the United States that has any sort of homeless problem that they can do this. And while none of it specifically targets the van life that I do or many of you do, which is traveling around and just living in our vans, it can be used against it. And in some areas where people perceive van life people to be the same as homeless people, and I am absolutely cognizant of the fact that there is a large overlap between the two groups, it's going to bleed over. So be aware of that. And what can you do to fight it? I don't know. Vote for people who don't do things like this. I mean, that's the only thing I can come up with. When you get the knock, be polite and move on. I still think that's the best strategy. I'll have a link to the article in the show notes, but I'm sure many of you are already aware of that. Number two, and this is actually exciting news, you might be saying goodbye to lithium batteries. So lithium batteries are not solid state, which means solid. Solid state's a funny word. It refers to electronics from years ago, but we carry it forward. And basically, solid state just means it's solid. It's not a liquid. And even lithium batteries that are made today have a little bit of liquid in there, and the lithium salts. It's not a lot, but it's a little bit. And there's a new type of battery that doesn't use lithium, and it doesn't use any liquid. And it's called a solid-state battery. And this has been something people have been talking about for years, but they're now on the market. And they're on the market for prices that are comparable to lithium batteries. In fact, if you get a really big one of these, it beats lithium batteries. What's better about them? They're lighter weight, they're smaller, and they have a much longer life cycle. Where we're getting 10 years out of a lithium battery, you can probably get 20 years out of one of these solid state batteries. Now, does that mean you should hold off and not buy your lithium battery you were going to buy this week, or perhaps today, the last day of Prime Day as I record this? No, because for the smaller batteries, the cost per kilowatt is much better for lithium right now, and you're probably better off with the lithium. If you were going to invest in a major system and you could wait a year, it might be worth it, because this is going to drive down the cost of lithium batteries too. But it's interesting. I mean, this is on the market. This is no longer vaporware. This is actually real solid state batteries. So they are better than lithium batteries in every way, except for the small ones, because they cost more. and they are the same as lithium batteries in one of the Achilles heels of lithium batteries, which is temperature charging, meaning that you can't charge lithium batteries below freezing. You also can't charge the new solid-state batteries below freezing, which is disappointing. If you'd like to learn more about this, I have a link in the show notes to an excellent video that explains the entire thing, every level of depth you could want about what this technology is, where you can buy these batteries now. Guess what? It's Amazon. And why you should or shouldn't buy them. It's an excellent article. But for me, what's exciting is that this is just the cusp. These are version one devices. And a year from now, things are going to be much, much better, and prices are going to keep coming down for batteries, which is good for all of us. Number three, there's a recall for Sprinters. Oh, no! Yeah, it's not that big of a deal, but if you have a Sprinter from 2023 or 2024, you may want to check to see if there's a recall out on it. These Sprinters have U-bolts that hold on the axle springs. All Sprinters do, but the U-bolts on these weren't treated properly. Basically, Mercedes got a bad batch from their supplier, and they need to replace them all. It affects about 1,200 vans total, so the chances you're impacted are pretty low. But it does impact 1500s, 2500s, 3500s, 4500s, and cutaways. So it's basically, if you've got a 2023 or 2024, you could be impacted. So I'll have a link to that in the show notes, and there are many places where you can check out if you have an open recall issue on your van. You can always call your local dealer and give them your VIN, and they could look it up for you. But this is a serious enough thing that you absolutely do want to get this fixed. What will happen over time is the bolt will stretch, and it will cause the axle to shift. And while it's probably not going to cause you to go out of control and crash, it could cause damage to other components. So go ahead and get it fixed. It's only going to take them a couple hours. It's not a big deal. Tech Talk. So we're seeing more and more little air conditioners come on the market. Like the EcoFlow is particularly intriguing to me. But people are complaining that I bought this EcoFlow and it doesn't cool off my whole van. And, well, that's right. These things are not magic. They're not going to cool off your whole van in most cases. And I'm going to revisit a strategy that I brought up a long time ago, which is don't try to cool your whole van. Just don't do that. The cooling is for sleeping. It really is. If it's noon and you're uncomfortable in your van, get the heck out of your van. Go somewhere else if you have that option, and most of the time you will. Go to a cafe, go to a museum, go somewhere else. Use their air conditioning. But at night, if it's too hot to sleep, that's a totally different issue. And so one easy, really simple way to deal with cooling at night, if you have one of these EcoFlow or conditioners, is to just cool your bed. The first thing you can try is to just point it at your bed, see if that's enough. But if not, try to make your bed into its own little compartment. You may remember old high-posted beds from, you know, like the 1600s where they had this big curtain that came around the bed. Well, think about doing that in your van. And you can duplicate that with something as simple as a mosquito net. Or you can go to IKEA and they sell masses of this white mosquito netting that's meant to be put around beds. We'll put it around the bed in your van. And you might be thinking, well, that's just a net. It's not going to keep the cold in. But you know what? It is. The way air is funny. Air does not mix as well as you might think. In fact, I just learned that in the International Space Station, if they didn't have fans on all the time, people would suffocate because the air doesn't circulate without gravity because heat makes things go up. If you take away the gravity, the air just sits there completely. So it will do that in your bed, too. It's not perfect. It's not like you're going to gain 100% efficiency or anything like that. But if you have a net around your bed and you stick one of the outlets of a Zero Breeze or EcoFlow or whatever kind of little air conditioner you have, you're probably going to be a lot more comfortable in that sleeping area than you would be if you just tried to cool off the whole van. Because that's a much, much bigger space. So think about that. Think about maybe enclosing your sleeping space, or if you're building out a van, think about a way to draw a curtain around the bed or something like that. Because this is going to help you not only in the summer, but it could also help you in the winter if you're using something like an electric blanket or just a really good sleeping bag. Product review. I am the proud owner of a pair of Zatutos. I think. I don't know how to pronounce this stuff. Yes, folks, it is the Zatuto, which is, well, it's a magnetic curtain. It's really not all that exciting, but I wanted to give you a review of this thing. These cheap magnetic curtains for cars have started flooding the market, and I bought a really cheap one. It's called the Zatuto, Z-A-T-O-O-T-O, car curtain. And it's a thin piece of fabric that's pleated, and at the top are a bunch of little, very strong magnets. And the idea is that it's real easy to put up. You just put it up on the window and then attach all the little magnets, and boom, it covers the window, and it's darkening. You can't see through it all. And you know what? It does exactly what it says. It is that. It's very small. It comes in a little bag, and when you open it up, it just spreads out over the window, and the magnets hold it in place, and it's easy, and you're done. And from the outside, you just can't see in the vehicle at all. That part works, so I can recommend it for that, and it's only $20, so hey, that's great. However, they're not that great. The reason I'm not thrilled with these is their sizes. Their sizes tend to be small, and I tried them in my truck and in my van, and Sprinter windows are gigantic, and I can tell you that they don't fit a Sprinter window. In my Ram 1500, they did a little better. Ram 1500s are kind of squat cabs. They're a little strange like that. They worked better, and I think if you had a car or a minivan, these things would actually work great. So if you're looking for very cheap window covers, and you know, they're not insulated, they're not going to really keep the thing a whole lot cooler, but if you're just looking for privacy, these are not a bad option, and especially for $20 for a pair. Now, they come in different sizes. There's front window, rear window, and then dividers, which are meant to be put behind the driver's seat, which is an intriguing thing. So I am not giving these my 100% recommendation. They're inexpensive and they don't fit my vehicles, but they might fit yours better. So there's a link in the show notes, or you just search Amazon for Zatuto car curtains, and you can see all the options there. And definitely check out the measurements. Make sure they're what you want. A number of other companies are making these too, so you know, don't feel like you have to be brand loyal to Zatuto, but it sure is fun to say. Tales from the road. So I've always wanted to do this, and I've always been a little afraid of it, but I jumped in and did it, and I slept in a casino parking lot. Yes, I did. It was highly recommended on iOverlander, and there were recent reviews, and I thought, what the heck? I'm going to try this, and I have a plan B spot right down the road if I get kicked out, so we'll just give it a shot. So I went to the Presque Isle Casino and Racetrack in Presque Isle, basically, Erie, Pennsylvania. And wow, it was a very interesting experience. So this isn't the most exciting tale from the road or anything, but I'm going to share this just so you understand what it's like staying in a casino. This casino, they had huge lots. The lots were enormous, and there were a bunch of them. And I did research on iOverlander as to where they wanted you to park. So I found which lot was preferable. And when I drove in there, I noticed there were other vans and RVs there. So that was clearly the spot. The lot was like, imagine a whole Walmart parking lot. It was easily that big, probably bigger. But there was no Walmart there. So it was very easy to park far, far away from everybody else. There were no facilities or anything. It was just a place to park. And it was fairly level. It was actually pretty level. It was really good on the level part. And, you know, perfect. But you're at a casino, right? Obviously, the idea here is that they're letting you sleep at the casino with the hopes that you'll come inside the casino, not that different from Cracker Barrel or even Walmart back in the day. So I thought, all right, what the heck, I'll go in the casino. If you are not a regular casino goer, one of the first things you should do at every casino is go to the Players Club desk, whatever they call it, and sign up for a new account. And the reason you should do this isn't because you're going to gamble enough to get any benefits out of the card. It's because they almost always give you freebies when you first sign up. Now, you're going to have to give them your email address and probably your phone number. You might be getting some spam for doing this, which is annoying. But the freebies are often worth it. For example, you might get $5 of free slot play, or you'll get a $5 match on a table, or half price at the buffet, or whatever. But it's usually something worthwhile doing. In my case, I got, I believe, because I had there were two promos I took advantage of. There was a spin the wheel thing and then like a welcome board gift. I got $10 of free slot play. Now, the free slot play, usually you have to put in some of your own money to access the free slot play, so it's a little bit tricky. But the bottom line for me was I left the casino with $50 I didn't have when I went in. So not only did I have a free place to park, I got $50 out of the deal too. Your chances of duplicating that are slim, but they're not any better than when you get free match play. I parked the van and I walked into the casino, hung around in there in the air conditioning. This was a really hot night. I watched some other people playing games. I did not gamble the whole time at all. I sat at the bar and there was a football game on, which I don't really care about, but I kind of watched the people watching the football game and that was fun. I had a beer and then I went back and went to sleep and had a perfectly quiet night. And in the morning I drove off, or I could have gone in for the breakfast buffet or whatever. So sleeping at casinos, a good idea. This one was, I had no problems at all at this place. It was, wow, every time I drive between Chicago and Vermont, I'm going to stop there because it's just so easy and pleasant. Although there is a really nice rest area in Erie that is a tiny bit more convenient. So anyway, again, this is not the most interesting tale from the road in the world, but heck, don't be afraid of staying at casinos. You know, they all have roving security. And I saw security go by several times and they waved. You know, they clearly knew I was there. That was not a problem. And I think most casinos are like that, as long as there's space. So if you do this, be considerate. Don't park by the front door. Park far away. See if there are any other vans parked and go near them, but not right next to them. And I think this is a good place to stay where you are welcome and, don't wreck it for us. Don't live there for a week and leave trash all over the parking lot, you know? Do your thing, go in the casino if you can, and then hit the road. A place to visit. You may have heard of Craters of the Moon National Park, which is in Idaho. It's right in the middle of south-central Idaho. I talked about it many, many episodes ago. And it is a fascinating place to visit. I mean, and beautiful campground there if you can get in. It's just a really neat place. And I don't know that it looks like Craters of the Moon, but it certainly doesn't look like Earth. It is just all these cinder cones and devastated landscape. I mean, it is quite the thing to see. Lots of hiking, some of it up some pretty serious hills and caves. Nice place to visit. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I want to talk about is the town that's 20 or 25 minutes away called Arco. Arco, Idaho is like the center of civilization for that area. And they have three interesting things there that make it worth a stop. The first, which seems out of place in Idaho, is the conning tower of a ballistic submarine with the numbers 666 written on the side. It's just in a park. You drive down the main road, and there's this park. And then there is this ballistic submarine coming out of the park. And it's actually the conning tower from the USS Devilfish, hence the 666. And, it's in Arco, Idaho. And there's a plaque there that explains why it's there. I'll let you guys go find that. But, that makes for some interesting folks. Greetings from Idaho in my submarine. A little strange. That is not the only potentially radioactive thing in Arco. Arco is also home to the first commercially successful, or at least prototype, nuclear reactor. Yes. It's got a couple of names. The most common name is EBR-1, which stands for Experimental Breeder Reactor 1. And, the first town in the United States powered completely by nuclear power was Arco, Idaho. And you might think, well, why? It wasn't because the submarine was there. Like, later. No, I'll let you guess why, and I'll give you some hints. What is Arco near? Well, Craters of the Moon National Park. There's nothing there. It's a very small town in the middle of nowhere. And if this nuclear breeder thingy kind of didn't work or got out of control, it would be better to have it there than, say, Los Angeles or New York City or anything like that. Yeah, it's a little cynical, but that's the reason. Arco was a small somewhat expendable town. Anyway, the Breeder is open now for tours, even though it had the only fatal nuclear disaster in American history. There was an accident there where an operator pressed the wrong button or something, and steam built out up in a chamber, and the chamber exploded, killing all three people in the reactor. That's a pretty wild story, but it is open for tours. I have done this. I've been in there. It is fascinating, and everyone tells you that it's completely safe, but I noticed that the tour guides are wearing little radiation meters. So there must be something in there they're worried about. And my favorite part was I got to play with those giant arms. You ever seen those, like, there's a big glass case and there's arms in there, and then there's controls for the arms outside? These are incredibly expensive. They cost millions of dollars, and they let you play with the ones they have because it's how they used to manipulate the nuclear cores and stuff. So that was a lot of fun. Anyway, if you're going to Craters of the Moon anyway, spend a half a day or so in Arco, Idaho, and if you're heading back down to Salt Lake City or something, it's on the way anyway. Arco is pretty cool. It's a fascinating little place. And there's one other thing you should take a look at, and that is up in the hills over the town, you will see a bunch of numbers, four-digit numbers and two-digit numbers. And I know why they're there, but I'm going to let you figure out. But there's definitely a clue in the fact that they're four digits or two digits. Resource recommendation. I don't think I've ever talked about this before, and this was all the rage when I was first starting the van life thing, and that is, well, Japanese wood burning. It goes by a couple of other names. I'm going to try to give it a shot here. Shusugiban or Yakisugi. And apparently there's a lot of controversy about whether those names are accurate or not. I don't care. We're just talking about a Japanese technique for burning wood. Why do you want to burn wood? Well, there's two reasons. If you burn wood, you can help preserve it. And we're not burning it to a crisp here. We're not going to damage the integrity of the wood. But you're going to char the outer part of the wood and then brush off all that char with a stiff brush and then softer brushes until you get this really interesting texture where the grain of the wood becomes dimensionalized. It's like 3D. It is a really nice effect. And then you cover that with oil or some stain or whatever. And a lot of people do this for exterior wood that they want to keep natural. So if you have a deck on the top, you might use this technique to preserve the wood a bit and to protect it from sun damage and things like that. It's not that hard to do. And I know some people have built their entire vans out of used pallets with this technique. So, hey, if you're looking to do an artsy build and you really like wood and you like the grain of wood, you really appreciate that, make yourself familiar with this Shusugiban or Yakisugi. And I have a link in the show notes that explains it and explains how to do it. You don't need any special tools. You just need a torch, some brushes, and some nice wood. And it could have your van looking really cool. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 220. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. And if you'd like to get a hold of me for any reason, you can find me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. I'll be very glad to hear from you. Until next time, remember the words of Benjamin Franklin, who said in a letter to Jean-Baptiste Leroy in 1789, "Our new constitution is now established. Everything seems to promise it will be durable. But in this world, nothing is certain except death and taxes."